This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Tree Lin. It sounds like the story of a mad scientist, but it seems that there is a growing trend of DIY brain stimulation around the world. Most of the people buying and using these brain stimulating devices are body hackers who want to improve their mental processes. However, in an open letter published in the journal Annals of Neurology, researchers have warned of the risks involved in performing transcranial direct current stimulation on oneself. Here to discuss this electrifying topic is neuroscientist Professor Dr. Jeffrey Malin Abdullah. Professor, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back again.
So it's a long phrase. What is transcranial direct current stimulation, more commonly referred to as brain stimulation?
Yeah, okay. So I dissect the definition into a few parts. Number one is transcranial. So you have to go through your cranium. Therefore, you have to go through your skin. Your skin is about 6 millimeters in thickness. Your skull bone is about 7 millimeters in thickness. And then you come to your brain. And the brain has a cortex or gray matter tissue, which is about 4 millimeters of thickness. So in total, you may transcranial means going through the skull towards the brain and using a direct current stimulation. I think that's quite straightforward. You learn that in physics, in school. You have direct current and, you know, alternating currents and other currents. And you stimulate the brain via these currents. So it's low current. It's not 240 volts, 50 hertz. You're going to electrocute your brain with that. It's just very, very low currents, 2 milliamperes that you're using to stimulate your brain if you're using current. If you're using magnet, it's much, much bigger. And if you are doing something else like electroconvulsive therapy, which is done for certain psychiatric patients, then those are giant currents, 800 milliamperes. So this is now a very interesting area of interest that we scientists and also doctors are using to treat our patients. And transcranial direct current stimulation can be used for illness and also for wellness.
But that is for doctors treating patients, as you mentioned. But what about body hackers with their own home kits? What are they trying to achieve?
Yes, okay. What are they trying to achieve with a gadget which is running on 9-volt batteries and which have been set up to give a maximum stimulation of 2 milliamperes to the brain? They're trying to make someone smarter, maybe increase the memory, increase the stamina, making memory, attention, and mathematical calculation better. I think those are the intentions. And make you maybe study harder and memorize more for SPM, for example.
If those are the intentions, is that the outcome? I mean, does it work?
Okay, very interesting questions. We have two scenarios. We have direct current stimulation. I'm just talking about currents. If you may ask me questions about magnetic stimulation, which is also a brain stimulation, you can use direct current stimulation for wellness and also for illness. So there have been many studies. I've Googled around and looked at, you know, there are more than 1 million studies done on brain stimulation using both current and magnets. And there are lots of them are doing electrical stimulation. So these studies are also for healthy people. So a basketballer, for example, wants to shoot his ball at the exact moment correctly into the loop. So he gets a point. So he goes for brain stimulation so that he does that accurately. A young kid who wants to ace his mathematics, he's not good at mathematics, but he does brain stimulation, and he's able to get 96%, for example, A+. So these are ongoing things, whether we like it or not, especially in the developed countries. And I think, lo and behold, I think even in the Klang Valley, people have already started doing this on their own.
Have you seen patients who've tried these home kits?
Oh, yes. I've not seen patients using the home kits themselves. Number one, you have to buy these home kits. So usually patients are not very smart enough, with the commerce, or innovative enough to buy the kits. Normally, they come to the hospitals. So the patients that I mentioned are patients with traumatic brain injury, or patients who have had stroke, or patients with movement disorders, or patients with memory disturbances. But in the hospitals, we mainly use magnetic stimulation, because magnetic stimulation has tested all hypotheses, and we know that it works. But direct current stimulation and its cousins, because you have all sorts of other different type of current stimulations, are trying to mimic what Big Mama magnetic stimulation has done. Unfortunately, it's not doing what it's supposed to do.
Would you recommend ever that someone take matters into their own hands and do it at home?
Okay. I'm speaking over the microphone here, very official. So, when you use a device, whether it's a magnetic stimulation or electrical stimulation, you must see what you're using the device for. If you're using it for illness, to improve someone who is sick, for example, with stroke or dementia, you must remember that all devices in Malaysia have to be covered under the Medical Device Act 2014. There's a second edition of this act. So these devices have to be registered, have to be checked. Even though they're running on 9 volts or 250 volts, all devices have to be checked. So the problems are those devices that are bought from internet or from someone, and these devices are just placed onto your scalp or your head, not knowing exactly where to stimulate, switching on the stimulation up to the maximum of 2 milliamps, and continuously stimulating your brain for, duration of 30 minutes, 2 hours, 6 hours, as long as that 9-volt battery can last. That can be pretty dangerous if we do not know what's going on.
And how is brain stimulation done in a traditional hospital or clinic setting? So if I walked in needing it, what would happen?
Yeah, okay. In the good old days, when you talk about traditional setting, do you know that the first brain stimulation using electricity was done in 43 AD? They used an electric ray, a fish that emitted electricity, and they actually put it on the head to reduce headache, to treat migraine. You know, that's 43 AD. Yeah. So nowadays, in our government hospitals or a clinical setting, the person who uses the brain stimulation, whether it is of magnetic source or electrical source, have to be trained using it. They have to go for courses. They have to pass certain tests and assessments. The use of the device has to be approved by a credentialing committee in that hospital, if it's a government hospital or a university hospital. And then the physician who sees the patient will prescribe the dose. It's not tablet, it's not milligrams, but it's milliamperes or Tesla, depending if you're using a magnetic stimulation. How many times per day? What is the duration? How long? The patient comes back. You check the patient again. You examine the patient. You see the patient becomes better. You have proof, maybe a radiological proof, that there is improvement to the blood flow of a certain area of the brain using functional MRI or electroencephalography. So you need special training to do this. So not all hospitals in Malaysia especially have this. So very specialized hospitals can do this.
And how do you determine, or rather, how would a doctor or a therapist determine who is right for this in terms of his or her patients? You know, which patient would suit getting this sort of treatment, whether it's in terms of magnets or direct current?
Yeah, okay. So again, when we talk about hospitals, we're talking about the ill patient. We're not talking about wellness. We do not have that capability at the moment or the permission to treat well people in hospital. We can only treat people who have memory disturbances, for example, strokes, maybe a traumatic brain injury. So these doctors are not many. There are a few doctors in Malaysia who have this special training. And some of them are in the Klang Valley. Some of them are outside the Klang Valley. And these doctors are allowed or gazetted by their respective hospitals because they actually train to treat these patients. So the training is not a short training. It's quite a long training. Some of these doctors have to be trained overseas and attend courses to be able to use this on a sick patient. So people, how do we know which patients should get it? Number one is you have to do imaging. You have to do a CT scan or MRI. Some of the more advanced centers do functional MRI to see whether a certain area of the brain is not functioning as it should be. Or they use an electroencephalography, which is a gadget that looks at the oscillations or brain waves of a certain patient to see whether the oscillations are normal or abnormal. And maybe the brain stimulation, whether it's magnetic or direct current, will help this patient.
I'm speaking today with neuroscientist Professor Datuk Dr. Jeffrey Malin Abdullah, and we're talking about electrical brain stimulation, brain stimulation as a whole, but we're also talking about how some people want to DIY that. And up next, we talk about the kinds of effects that can have on the brain. You are listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and joining me in the studio today is neuroscientist Professor Datuk Dr. Jeffrey Malin Abdullah. We're talking about brain stimulation, both in terms of what can happen using direct current as well as with magnetic energy, and how some people don't want to go to a hospital to do this. They want to DIY this at home. And this has resulted in some people, kind of sounding the alarm on this. And apparently small differences in parameters can have a big effect on the brain when it comes to brain stimulation. What parameters are we actually talking about?
Okay. When you talk about parameters, we are looking at current or magnets. You cannot use the word amperes, but currents we can use the word amperes. So we're looking at milliamperes. So the DIY hackers are using, brain hackers are using something run on 9 volts. So 9 volts is not much. But the electricity circuit is made in such a way that it can give most probably a maximum stimulation of 2 milliamperes. And 2 milliamperes is theoretically nothing much. But what can it do? Can it do harm? Can it do good? That's another thing. If you talk about electroconvulsive therapy, where certain psychiatric patients, are stimulated using this current stimulation, 800 milliamperes. Just imagine, 2 milliamperes, that's the DIY hacker, and the 800 milliamperes that hospital use for electroconvulsive therapy for patients with psychosis. And then the magnetic stimulation is a 3 Tesla power. It gives about 50 hertz of power. So if we all compare, we talk in terms of hertz, you have the deep brain stimulation, that gives about 40 hertz of power, the magnetic stimulation that gives about 50 hertz of power, and the electrical convulsive therapy that gives more than 100 hertz of power. And all of them may be able to do damage to the brain, directly or indirectly. I would give example of a car battery. Here you have a car battery. The car battery is of a certain voltage. It has chemicals or fluid in it that keeps the electricity running into the car. So if the battery ages and you're using a car battery that is 10 years old, you know you're not going to start your car for certain reasons. Number one is the age of the battery. Number two, the chemicals or the fluid in the battery are pretty old. So the sodium, chloride and whatever chemical stuff that are in the battery are not able to function as well as the battery gets older and older. And then the structure of the battery. You have big batteries, you have small batteries. Big batteries are used for certain, maybe driving certain vehicles. Smaller batteries maybe for smaller vehicles, etc. So let's replace this battery with the most important cell in the brain, which is called the neuron. So the neuron ages. We have 100 billion neurons. 50% of these neurons are in the cerebellum. And the other 50% are in our frontal lobe, parietal lobe, temporal lobe, occipital lobe, if you still remember biology. And of these, 14 billion cells are on the six layers or the top slice of what we call gray matter of the brain. So the direct current or the magnetic stimulation or the electroconvulsive therapy are all directed to these 14 billion neurons. The neurons have got different shapes and sizes. They have different functions. You have neurons to taste. You have neurons to smell. You have neurons to move your hand. And you have neurons for emotion. The neurons for emotion are located in the first three layers of the gray matter. The last layers are for sensation and for movement. So when we stimulate a neuron, okay, you ask an 18-year-old boy to climb up the hill. He will climb up the hill pretty fast. You ask an 80-year-old man to climb up the hill. He might not make it, you know. So when we are bashing these neurons with direct stimulation, it can be 2 milliamperes, it can be 800 milliamperes, we do not know exactly which neurons can take it. And neurons are talking to each other as a community. So when you are thinking, oh, the flower is beautiful, it's not one neuron that's thinking about that. It is billions of neurons. So you're giving 2 milliamperes to a certain area in the part of your skull, and you hope that that little stimulation will tweak 14 billion neurons to do something. I think if you ask an electrician, he would say, that's impossible, you can't do that, you know. So there is also a hype about this electrical stimulation. We have to see what's logical and what's not logical. Magnetic stimulation is logical because it's tested years of trials. But the direct current stimulation is something like a small kid is trying to mimic big daddy, you know. It might not work. And there are already studies being done, published by the University of Melbourne, indicating, looking at all the literature and all these publications that have come out, are studies using normal undergraduate students from universities. But the people out there that are doing their DIY brain hackers are not clever, intelligent UC students. They are people from different walks of life. And some of them may not have a normal brain or normal neuron structure. And by blindly stimulating your brain, you might get into trouble.
Is it possible to isolate brain stimulation to a particular part of the brain?
Yes.
But not DIY?
Not DIY, because right now for magnetic stimulation, even in our hospital, in Hospital UC Science Malaysia, we do a MRI of the patient and we do a special imaging called tractography. Tractography shows you the tracks that come from the top of the brain to your arms, to your legs, and the tracks that are responsible for emotion, for hearing, for speaking. And we are able to use those tracks, direct the stimulator of the magnetic coil to stimulate at the precise area where those tracks are. That is, we call it image-guided. At the moment, there is no image-guided direct current stimulation. There are experiments being done, but nothing sold commercially because it's just too expensive. The image-guided software and hardware will be more expensive than the 9-volt transcranial direct stimulation apparatus.
And when one part of the brain is stimulated, does this benefit come at a cost to other cognitive functions? Or, you know, or can the brain just keep going but with one part supercharged?
Yeah, okay. I have to tell the public who are listening today about a little bit about anatomy of the brain. Okay, if you Google Brodmann, B-R-O-D-M-A-N-N, Brodmann areas. So Professor Brodmann mapped the brain, an open brain, and he gave numbers. There are approximately 52 areas or districts in the brain, and every district has its own function. So if you look at what our DIY guys are doing, they're putting the something on the forehead. They're not knowing exactly where they're putting it. They just put it. So we assume that they're putting on their forehead or close to their forehead, and that's where the frontal lobe is. So in the frontal lobe, you have a Brodmann area 4, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 44, 45, 46, 47, you know, different numbers. By stimulating this frontal lobe, they might be able to improve working memory. They might be able to improve episodic memory. They might be able to improve calculation and their music ability. Yes, by blindly putting their stimulation there. And if they do stimulate, let's say, for example, Brodmann area 4 and 6, the studies show that Brodmann area 8 and 9 will be starved of their blood supply. Because, you know, the blood supply is going to Brodmann area 4 and 6. 8 and 9, which is just next door, will say, what am I? Everybody's going there. They're sort of saying the film star, you know. So we're not getting enough nutrients. We're not getting enough oxygen. We're not getting enough blood flow. And what happens? So the person may be good in certain part of his memory tasks, but maybe not good in other tasks. So then you win some, you lose some. You cannot win everything.
We've been discussing, we'll get to the kind of conditions that brain stimulation can help. But before that, you know, you were speaking earlier about how it's used for the well and the unwell, or it can be. Is there a lot of focus right now on usage of it in the well, or is it primarily still looking at, the conditions that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, okay. So if you Google this now and you just put those words in, you'll see it's about 60-40 or 55-45%. Very close. So there are a lot of experiments out there doing on normal human beings, between commas, mainly university students. You pay 50 ringgit to university student, do the experiments, and you have the rest doing it on stroke patients, dementia patients, traumatic brain injury patients. So, but remember, the experiments out there that have been done on well brain are undergraduate students or normal volunteers. The people out there on the streets, they are not all IQ 140 or more than 100, smart people, good SPM results. You have different type of population out there. And by assuming that the results from clever university students will also be the results you will find in normal human beings out there, then I think there will be a great bias.
Now we come to the part, we've been talking a bit about DIYing mostly, but I think in these conditions there's no such thing, because deep brain stimulation is sometimes used to treat disorders such as Parkinson's, dystonia. How does brain stimulation help here?
Yeah, okay. You use the word deep brain stimulation. Magnetic stimulation and direct current stimulation is superficial brain stimulation. The deep brain stimulation can go to little nuclei in the basal ganglia that controls the movement of your hands, so that a person with Parkinson's disease who's shaking, and if you are able to put electrode at the correct nuclei and you're able to inhibit certain impulses, the tremor stops. The person can walk. He can talk normally. Also for dystonias, a dystonic person who has very severe hyper or dystonicity of his muscles, when the electrodes go to the right place, it inhibits the charges, the tone is normal, he's able to walk and he's normal. That is deep brain stimulation. Deep brain stimulation is invasive. I am a neurosurgeon. I've done deep brain stimulation. And you have to make a hole in the skull. You have to put an electrode in. You have to find the nuclei with help of MRI. Then you put the electrode at the correct nuclei, and then you stimulate it with a battery, like a pacemaker. Okay, that is surgery. Okay, the DIY, these guys are not doing surgery. This is just putting something on the skin, you know, and stimulating it. It's superficial. The magnetic stimulation can go up to 6 centimeters deep. So from the surface of your scalp to the depth of the brain, 6 centimeters. But the superficial untested, with the converse, unreliable direct current stimulation can only go very superficial, maybe about not more than 3 or 4 millimeters. So that's just the gray matter. So you must remember that in the surface of the brain, the regimen lineup of the neurons in relation to the brain are in different ways. Some of them are longitudinal arranged, some of them are not longitudinal arranged. And if you stimulate the cells wrongly, instead of stimulating them at the neuron part, but you're stimulating at the axon part, you're going to cause problems. And the cells will be confused because you have to move from north to south. Suddenly, you're asking the cells to respond from south to north. So the cells will get confused. When a whole lot of neurons get confused, they can cause abnormalities in the response, mainly in cognition. So someone might have worse memory problems than problems where we see with behavior, and we see them maybe not sleeping well, for example, because people are using it to get lucid dreams during sleep. And instead of getting lucid dreams, you get a nightmare, for example, because the stimulation is done wrong.
What about brain stimulation therapy for addiction?
That's interesting. Okay. Magnetic stimulation has worked for smokers, drug addiction. For direct current stimulation and addiction, there are papers out there looking at the effects. But the question right now, if you read the literature, the follow-up of these patients are very short. In fact, some of them are just 6 months follow-up. So what happens after 6 months? What happens after 1 year? And the studies have not looked at the controls. That means sham controls. That means you say you are the non-smokers. So is it workable? Is it not workable? Again, my gut feeling says that the magnetic stimulation works, but the direct current stimulation still needs improvement in technology.
While we're talking about addiction, can people become too dependent on the effects of brain stimulation?
I would say yes, because remember that transcranial magnetic stimulation, mind you, has been used to treat depression, anxiety disorders, and certain other psychiatric and psychological diseases. And that is well known. And you can see the relapse of depression. The patient comes back to the magnetic stimulator, gets zapped with the commas, and feels well again because the rush of the neurotransmitters and the hormones become better. You have that good feeling. And then it lasts maybe for a few weeks to a few months, and he comes back again. So whether you want to use the word addicted to magnetic stimulation, it is like just taking a tablet for stroke, for example. You have to take your aspirin. If you don't stop your aspirin, the stroke will come back again. So it's just like this is now a brain stimulation type of treatment. When you stop getting the magnetic stimulation, you will relapse. Again, magnetic stimulation is not done alone. It's done with, you know, psychopharmacology with tablets. So the patient will come again for both the tablets and the stimulation. So I would not use the word addiction. Addiction is something really very bad word. But I would say that the patient would need continuous therapy with magnetic stimulation, maybe lifelong.
How long do the effects typically last? You said a few weeks or a few months. I mean, do we know? Is there a range?
Yeah, okay. There have been studies, and studies have been done. They have tested it with functional MRI. They've tested it with electroencephalography that looks at brain waves. They've tested it with magnetoencephalography looking also at brain waves. So they've seen effects that last up to 6 months after stimulation. But I'm talking about magnetic stimulation. The brain stimulation using direct currents, the study is inconclusive. Some people say there is no effect at all. Some studies say there are effects. The question right now is, the stimulation has to be constant. If you give one stimulation today and you stop it and you do not continue the stimulation, I don't think one can have any effect from whether it is a magnetic stimulation or current stimulation. But if you do give constant stimulation for a long, long time, following a prescribed dose. I'm using the word prescribed dose because I'm talking like physician. I'm not trying to say that, you know, that direct current stimulation should be done tomorrow, because there's still a big gray area there where many people do not know what's actually happening. But a lot more people know what's happening with magnetic stimulation. So, I mean, for people who do need brain stimulation for whatever reason, I would suggest that the person seek, whether it is for wellness or for illness, I think the person should seek medical advice.
And finally, outside of these sorts of therapies, outside of having to have electricity anywhere near your face at all, what is your advice for people who want to improve their brain function without brain stimulation?
Okay. So I think the cheapest brain stimulation is exercise. And again, I think I've spoke this in BFM maybe a year or 2 years ago, where exercise can increase the number of neurotransmitters, increase your blood levels of oxytocin and hormones, and exercise can increase the size of your neurons and your brain volume. Cheapest way of doing exercise. I don't think you need to pay money for it. You just run around the block, go up the stairs, go down the stairs. So those are very, very straightforward, tested methods of stimulating the brain. So why not try that first? Then sitting on your couch, putting these things on your head, switching on your 9-volt battery, and zapping your brain, whereas you can just chuck those things away and go and jog around the park for 15 minutes, 30 minutes.
Thank you very much for coming in today, Prof. I've been speaking with Professor Datuk Dr. Jeffrey Malin Abdullah, neuroscientist, and we've been discussing, a number of different things, DIY electrical brain stimulation, magnetic stimulation, just the purpose, I suppose, of what can happen when you stimulate your brain through these means. You are listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.